Welcome to the fourth season of the Energy Central Power Perspectives podcast. We bring leading minds from the energy industry into the podcast booth to discuss the challenges and trends that are transforming and modernizing our energy system. And new for 2024, our listeners can now submit a recorded question to a future podcast episode. Just look for the SpeakPipe link in the show notes below this episode and leave us a voicemail with a question for a future guest. And a quick thank you to West Monroe, our sponsor of today's show. Now, let's talk energy. I'm Jason Price, Energy Central podcast host and director with West Monroe, coming to you from New York City. And with me, as always, from Orlando, Florida, is Energy Central producer and community manager, Matt Chester. Matt, sometimes we are fortunate to welcome back previous guests who have updates to share, new stories to tell, and ultimately additional wisdom to drop. Today is one of those episodes as we welcome back Suzanne Ogle, the president and CEO of the Southern Gas Association. Can you give us a rundown on the first episode we had with Suzanne?
Yeah, Jason, happy to do so. We had Suzanne on the podcast for the first time in May of last year, and that was episode number 123, titled Exploring the Role of Gas in the Decarbonization Journey. I'll definitely leave a link to that episode in the show notes, so any of our listeners can choose to listen to that one as well as today's episode. But the theme is just what it sounds like. Suzanne joined us to share that the gas industry, it's not in a fight against the decarbonization journey, but instead agrees about this critical pathway and has been highlighting the ways that the gas sector can have the ability to be a key partner to renewables in the years to come, enabling a greater overall pursuit of low and no carbon energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're thrilled to have Suzanne with us again. So as president of the Southern Gas Association, Suzanne brings a wealth of experience and passion to the clean energy landscape. And as a strategic communicator, she believes in the transformative power of effective communication to foster relationships, seize opportunities, and drive innovation towards a sustainable clean energy future. Suzanne is a visionary leader known for her big picture thinking, innovative mindset, and problem-solving approach grounded in an asset-based philosophy. Please join me in welcoming back Suzanne Ogle to the Energy Central Power Perspectives podcast.
Thanks, Jason. Glad to be here.
We are thrilled to have you on again. So, Suzanne, let's just jump into things. You recently published a white paper titled Grit for the Grid. We'll be sure to include a link in the show notes on where to find this paper. Can you start us off with an executive summary of what was published?
Sure. You know, historically, the United States energy system was viewed as reliable. And so the public has really grown accustomed to its omnipresence and its benefits. And I think for most people in industrial societies, energy is there whenever you need it. And it's also somewhat mysterious. They don't really know how they get the energy source. They don't know what's responsible for turning their lights on. They just flip the switch or they turn the heat in the dial and there goes the thermostat. So, you know, if you fast forward two decades, this reliable energy system that everybody came to know and depend on isn't necessarily the case anymore. And I think it was in 2023, at the end of it, I think there was like 345 electrical disturbances that impacted about 5 million customers. So they impacted about 5 million customers. That's a huge increase, right? About a 1,400% increase, 1,400% increase. And so that's really why I wrote Grit for the Grid, because we're at a critical moment in our nation's energy future. And I really wanted to try to raise the energy IQ. And so that was the fundamental aspect of it. But really the fact is that energy and economic development are linked together. And to meet the growing energy demand and address climate change, we have to have solutions we can implement today and have a long-term plan. And so when, you know, climate change, it's a very complex problem, and it really requires a deep understanding of all the different aspects before we start to make these sweeping changes. And energy infrastructure can be very, very long lasting. So decisions that we make now about how we deploy and regulate energy sources will have a material influence on energy access. And it's also going to influence geopolitical and the economic outcomes of other countries. So that's kind of the foundation for why I wrote it. And I think, you know, when I look at today's discussions, they're on reducing carbon emissions and center around quick fixes. But, you know, advances in technology, connected devices, and all the other things that are going to transform the way we think about energy brings us back to the importance of reliability and how natural gas fits into that long-term energy equation.
Yeah, absolutely. But among the key concerns brought by the paper is the difference between renewables as a clean energy solution, but also a potential reliability challenge. So while public support for renewables is high, intermittency remains a significant challenge. Tell us, how can utilities communicate this effectively and educate the public on the limitations of renewables while still working towards decarbonization goals?
Well, I think it starts with raising the energy IQ, and that's through programs like yours. Any opportunity that you get with an informed source to be able to talk about and provide a clear and transparent information about where the energy is coming from. But, you know, the majority of the work is really going to lie on state regulators and industry to develop solutions that are better aligned, that align the gas and the electric industry so that we maintain and improve the reliability of both the gas and the electric systems that our nation depends on. So when I think about it from that point of view, you just have to say to people that there's a big challenge here and we have to be able to communicate and address this in a way that is not finger pointing or exclusive and allows people to think through solutions by looking at them from all the way from cradle to grave. And I think that's really part of a very important aspect of how do we get to where we can address the reliability challenge.
Our audience is pretty well informed. However, you know, there's terminology that is unique to the gas space, including resource adequacy and spare margin. Define these for us, and how does gas play a role in maintaining reliability during such scenarios where this would come up?
Sure. Yeah, this industry is full of acronyms and terms. And so everybody might think they know them. There's always more that you can know, right? So if we go back to resource adequacy, sometimes called RA, it's just really a regulatory construct developed to ensure that there's going to be sufficient resources to serve the electric demand under all but the most extreme conditions. It was a result back of California's need to develop assurance of adequate supply. I think it was back about 2000, they were having rolling blackouts and price spikes and power shortages. And so the legislature got together and they enacted Section 380 in the Public Utilities Code, and they required the PUC and Casio to adopt a program so that all of the retail load-serving entities would have to maintain a physical generating capacity and electrical demand response that would be adequate to meet its load requirement during peak and also to have sufficient operating reserves. So essentially, they need to own or contract sufficient resources to meet peak demand, plus a reserve margin. And the actual dispatch of the resources to meet load in real time is performed on an economic basis with the lowest variable cost resources that are committed first. And so gas really plays an essential role because each of the LSEs, they have to procure a certain amount of resource adequacies from flexible resources that can ramp up or down on short notice to meet those variations in load and intermittent energy production. And essentially, this is to address the duck curve problem, which is really California is a big, they have such a high solar adoption rate that really creates a challenge for the utility to balance out that demand on the grid because you have an increased need for electric generators to ramp up quickly with the energy production when that sun sets and that contribution from the solar panels is falling.
Right. And this is all, in many respects, a reliability issue as much as anything else. So let's talk about that. I believe your position at SGA is that we are heading toward higher energy costs because of the dependency on renewable energy. You have a perspective that utilities should consider. So talk to us about this. And what should utilities be doing to properly balance cost with reliability now and into the future?
Yeah, this kind of goes back to where I started. You know, all energy sources, including renewable energy, I think should go through some kind of a systematic full life cycle analysis, meaning from your material acquisition to your manufacturing to the use of it and even the final disposition of that. And so those assessments will really help delineate what the full benefits are and the costs of a fuel or a process and allow decision makers to select the most effective solution. Right now, that's not what utilities are doing. They're rolling out alternative rate plans to improve reliability, asking people to get off the system, right? But we need to make sure that we're designing rates for an equitable energy evolution. And California's electricity prices are high and rising. I think they're the highest in the country, and they pose a really heavy burden for the economically vulnerable households. I think I talked to you last time about my aunt and uncle who lived out there that were on a fixed income. And, you know, I looked at their electricity prices. They lived in a 100% electric house because it was built in the 70s. And with the states recovering substantial fixed costs through that increased per kilowatt hour pricing, the price customers pay is really much higher than what it actually costs to provide the electricity. And so that's why I think it's so important for utilities to look at that full life cycle analysis to understand what is that cost, and then how are we going to mitigate the impact of that in a way that makes sense. And that's from planning to have an all of the above energy mix, including gas, and use their reliability and the cost in a way that makes sense. Otherwise, if a utility wants to meet their goals, they're going to have to require a large percentage of customers to change their energy usage behaviors. And I see that as unlikely.
Let's talk about fuel choice. You've mentioned this in your writings and in some of your presentations. Given that our listeners are in the utility space, what advice do you have for them on how they can assist in the advocacy for fuel choice while ensuring a clear understanding of the associated costs?
Yeah, well, you know, reliability isn't a function of any individual generation technology, but it's really a function of the electricity system as a whole. And that's why we have to have an all of the above solution. We need power systems that can match the supply and demand in a coordinated and inflexible way. And so if you're in a utility, I think one of the things that utilities do is they provide billing that people don't understand. And when they don't understand what they're getting billed for, where their power is coming from, it creates an additional confusion. And so, you know, you see these states pushing back on fuel choice because once they understand the implications of some of the choices that are being made and the cost impact on them, they're starting to push back and saying, we don't want to have these mandated on us and we're not going to absorb these costs. And so that's why I think really transparency and a really clear way to understand what you're paying for and how you're paying for it, it's complicated, right? Rate making's complicated. And I don't know that there's a lot of stakeholders that want to talk in a rate making process, and I'm not sure all of them really understand the intricacies of how a utility works or how an energy system works. I think they're going to have to start to be more transparent and clear in how their systems are working. For instance, if they are pulling in gas to back up the system, they need to be clear about that. We had to pull on gas to back it up. And then listen, as you have, I think Palo Alto just pushed back on the electrification, but as you have additional cities either doing electrification, you have additional EV loads on systems, it creates a much higher demand. And look at, you can look at all the data centers and the demand the data centers create. It's exorbitant. And so without some kind of permitting overhaul so that we can get adequate systems in place to keep a lower carbon system going, we're going to be running up with really high costs and people pulling off systems. And I think the utilities have a responsibility to make sure that they're very clear to the general public about exactly the challenges that they're dealing with.
Yeah, I fully agree. And just to elaborate on the complexity, you know, in the industry, there's a certain understanding, but to the general public, it doesn't fully understand the complexity and challenges that we need to think through to make sure that we're prepared. So my next question is really around the sort of trends in the industry in deprioritizing fossil fuel. And of course, the loudest was this past year, the COP28, declaring, you know, the beginning of the end. So this transition is very hard to map through to make sure that we maintain this reliability. You talk to the gas utilities all the time. So share with us the conversations you're having with them. What are they saying? What's the mood? What are the gas customers telling you and the RTOs basically, you know, trying to wade through this as well? So just share with us your insight that you've experienced here.
Well, you know, you can go to COP28 and they can stand up there and make a demand that they're going to deprioritize fossil fuel, and you can be here and know that there's a huge line of people waiting to get gas at their houses. There are systems that are needing gas. They're looking for storage any way they can get it, and the storage in terms of gas, storage in terms of battery. I mean, I've got somebody coming to speak at our spring gas conference that's got compressed natural gas as storage for a utility. But a lot of the solutions for storage and reliability are coming from gas. And so while they can go over there and talk about deprioritizing fossil fuel, the reality is here, we need more of it. We need more of it, and the systems need more of it. And the utilities are scrambling around trying to make sure that they're going to have a system that can perform in all the conditions. And that when I talk to my members, I'm telling you, all of them have record demand days on gas. Record. Not only once, but consistently. And the systems performed extremely well. And it wasn't because of happenstance. It was a lot of strategic coordination on the systems part, so especially on my operators' parts. And then they get credit for that. And so, you know, there's unicorns and rainbows, and then there's the reality of running a system.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So, I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about the IRP, right? The Integration Resource Plan. So, you know, talk to us about that. How is that being managed? Where's the role of gas, and how are you seeing this managed at the utilities when they work on and publish their IRPs?
Yeah, no, really interesting. As a matter of fact, at my management conference that's coming up in April, I've got a roundup on that just because it's so important. And so we are, you know, it really takes a lot of alignment and coordination and understanding, and what does it really look like to make sure that the gas is available for those systems. And so I think the role of the integrated resource plan is changing and more important now than ever. And it needs to be a very coordinated effort so that we can deliver what the public needs to deliver.
Suzanne, on the show, we've had leaders from national research labs, institutes, and academics who run scenarios of future systems and economies. Perhaps putting you on the spot here, with all the net zero and carbon-free goals by 2050, what does this future look like through your lens?
It looks like a lot of assurance for gas through my lens. By the way, I'm the president of a research organization, so I understand research, and I think it's very important, and there's a lot of gains to be had from it, but research is research, and then again, there's the practicality of running a system. And I was at a research firm who was modeling for California, taking gas out. What did it look like if they took gas out of California? So the price went from about $1.40 up to 18 something. And then there was about a 60% delta. And I said, where are we going to get that generation from? We don't know. We just model it. Right. And so it happened to be a hot day in Texas when I was there at that lab. So I pulled up the ERCOT grid just for sport. You know, it was middle of summer and we were running it. I think it was 60 or maybe even 70% natural gas in Texas in the summer. And that's not the cold, right? It's for the air conditioning. And so they can model things. It's important to model, but it's also important to be able to adequately address the deltas and the findings of that. I mean, not to mention the going from $1.40 up to $18. That's a whole different scenario. That's a scenario that can be addressed, you know, through pricing or subsidies or what, you know, I don't know how you're going to have Americans pay, go from $1.40 to 18, but the finding the fuel to fill the gap is the bigger issue. And that's why I say this is a long-term, very positive play for gas. And listen, I mean, as we think about it, we're never going to lose sight of reducing emissions and making sure that we do that. And there's all kinds of ways we can do that that involve new technology. So as much as a data center or new technology is going to pull a higher demand on power, it's also going to create opportunities using new technology, AI, and other things to think about how we do things more efficiently. I mean, if you look at hospitals, they're running on gas. You don't see any hospital not running on gas because they have to have that assurance of power. It's just like the data centers. They need to know that they are going to be able to have power all the time. It can't be intermittent. And I was talking to somebody the other day that told me, gosh, I want to say it's Amazon, just hired a chief nuclear officer because they were going to put their data center on nuclear because they couldn't rely on the intermittent sources. They had to be sure of it. So they need gas and they need nuclear.
Yeah, that continuity is important, no doubt about it. Well, Suzanne, thanks for your insight. And we're going to give you the final word. But if you recall from the last time you were on the show, we have something called the lightning round, which gives us an opportunity to learn more about you, the person, rather than you, the professional. So we have five questions to ask, and we ask you to keep your response to one word or phrase. So are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
All right. What was your 2024 New Year's resolution?
Family.
Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Sound of Silence, because I'm a horrible singer.
What was your dream job when you were growing up if it wasn't in energy?
I wanted to be a pilot.
Do you have a special skill or secret hobby that you wish to share?
A secret hobby. You know what? I'm going to paint this weekend. Not in my house. I'm going to paint a picture.
Very nice. What is your next big goal for your career?
You know what? I love what I do right now. My goal is to continue to do it and have more impact.
Nicely stated. And you've done a great job navigating through the lightning round. So as I said, I'm going to give you the final...
Good thing I know myself.
Well, we're going to give you the final word. So with an audience filled with utility industry representatives, what's the takeaway lesson you hope they retain from today's conversation?
I think it's really about collaboration and education and going out there and being an advocate for helping the general public understand what is required to create an energy system that will supply the amount of energy that we need and is at an affordable rate and that is done responsibly. And so I think everybody needs to be a champion for natural gas, for energy, for collaboration and all of the above approach. And you know, anybody who wants to go into their corner and box isn't going to help anybody out. I think it's everybody has to work together. So that would be my plea to everybody is make sure that you are using every amount of information and education that you have to help inform the general public and raise the energy IQ.
I would say that is well stated. This was a great conversation. I'm excited to see what our listeners will think, what comments they'll leave on the Energy Essential platform. Hopefully you can hop back into the platform and answer any questions or comments that may come your way, Suzanne. But until then, I just want to thank you for sharing your insights with us on today's episode of the podcast.
It's an honor to be here with you guys. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. And we appreciate you. And you can always reach Suzanne through the Energy Central platform, where she welcomes your questions and comments. We also want to give a shout out of thanks to the podcast sponsors that made today's episode possible. Thanks to Wes Monroe. Wes Monroe is a leading partner for the nation's largest electric, gas, and water utilities, working together to drive grid modernization, clean energy, and workforce transformation. Wes Monroe's comprehensive services are designed to support utilities in advancing their digital transformation, building resilient operations, securing federal funding, and providing regulatory advisory support. With a multidisciplinary team of experts, Wes Monroe offers a holistic approach that addresses the challenges of the grid today and provides innovative solutions for a sustainable future. Once again, I'm your host, Jason Price. Plug in and stay fully charged in the discussion by hopping into the community at energycentral.com. And we'll see you next time at the Energy Central Power Perspectives Podcast.